And welcome to another edition of Shadow of Love. I am your co-host, Holly, intimacy coach, writer, lover of great white sharks, all things spooky, and really excited for our special guest today. But first, I want to introduce my co-host, Ernest. Hey, Ernest.
Hey, Holly. How you doing? What's going on? I'm Ernest. I'm the co-host of Shadow of Love. I am a mixologist, a restaurant manager, hotel manager, a soul food chef. Love all Southern cuisine and lover of all things old and all things soulful. And I'm glad to be here with our super special guest today. So I think we're going to have a really, really good time.
Me too. So we would like to give a warm welcome to Craig Arlett, aka Izzy Funk. Hey, Izzy, how are you today?
Hi, it's me. I'm so happy to do this. This is really fun. I don't get to be interviewed very often because I'm not famous and not many people care what I think. So,
well, we care.
Well, that's why you distinguish yourself as somebody who does. So I'm more than happy to expound a little bit for the purposes of this.
Awesome. Give us a little bit of background. Tell us about your what you're doing. You know, what's your thing?
Well, currently I work a day job primarily. I'm an accountant for a trucking company. I got my degree back in 2017, but I've been a professional guitar player part-time since then and full-time since about 1997 through about the late 2010s. So about 20 years or so of being a full-time musician. And that's where we'll start things, and I'll move forward from there. I'll fill you in on some little tidbits and sprinkle some bacon bits on my history. I also am I am actually very old, but not very soulful. So I think Ernest is going to like me in that regard.
Oh, I like you anyway, Iz.
My man.
Well, we're so happy to have you here today. And today we're tackling, you know, kind of a broad topic of love and music. And so I wanted to throw it out to the two of you to kind of kick off, like, what is the first song that you can remember that you associate with love?
Oh, shit.
Wow, that's a great first question. Ernest, you got this?
You know what? My favorite song of all time is, and Holly knows this, I'm a diehard Stevie Wonder fan, and Stevie holds a real big special place in my heart as a musician. I think it's As.
Ooh, that's a really good one.
I really think that's the first song. Like, it's not like a super slow jam or anything like that, but the way that he talks about love, and I remember, like, because that's the music my parents would play, like on Saturday afternoons while we're cleaning the house or whatever. And that was like our day off from church. And so, like, I think my earliest two songs I remember that really remind me of love is Isn't She Lovely and As, right? For me. You know what I mean?
Mine are way cornier than that, man. Those are really good. Those are certainly like, Those are really good introductions to the world that Stevie Wonder has created, to the world of Stevie Wonder's music, for sure. The one of his that I don't want to say it's the first one, but this is certainly one that always makes me think about think about my wife. You know what I mean? Like at the end of at the end of the movie of High Fidelity. I want to say it's from, you know the one I'm talking about? Yeah, I believe when I fall in love with you. Oh my God, that song kills me.
It's a beautiful song.
Beautiful,
it's a beautiful
too,
song.
Man.
Like, there's this one song. It's the one, shit, it escaped me. I remember my son was like 4 years old and I was in the backyard and Blame It on the Sun.
Oh, yeah.
Right. The song is Blame It on the Sun. And I'm like watering the grass and I got my speakers out there. And my boy was real little. He was like four. And that song was playing and he picked up on it real fast and he ran over to me and he was weeping openly. He was like, Dad, Stevie Wonder lost his love and he can't ever get it back, right? And he ran into the house, like he ran up the patio, ran through the house and just like started crying with his mom. And she was like, you can't ever play that song again, right? Ever. Right. So I think he kind of got the Stevie Wonder love bug, but like in the backwards way first. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, because I would play Stevie all the time. But outside of that, there's a few songs that really, really move me that I can't really play without. You know how like you have a song that makes you think about some like somebody or something? Yeah, there's a few songs I can't like emotionally legally play.
I fully understand that. There's a number of tunes and we can get into some of the specifics as we move forward in the conversation, but there's a couple of tunes, and it's not necessarily even a one that jumps out at me. There's a tune that I want to set the stage before I even mention the song, because nobody knows this song. Like, unless you, there's a Guns N' Roses song, which I'm a very big Guns N' Roses fan. Guns N' Roses came out with their most recent album in like 2008, something like that. Like, you know, it had been like 15, 16 years since their last one. And, yeah. And like my wife got it for me when we were in the first couple of years of our relationship. She got it for me for Christmas. And right around that time, a very, very good friend of mine passed in a car accident. And she and her husband were driving back to Pittsburgh. They lived in North Carolina, and she died right before Christmas. And she was the center of a large group of friends. And it was just really like destructive. And while I have a number of memories that surround my friend, a number of songs that she, you know, we both turned each other on to tons of great music, man.
Yeah.
But there's the song that played. I left her funeral. We left burying her, and I was driving to a recording session right after that. And I was bumping that Guns N' Roses record. And there was a song on that record that was the power ballad of the record. That was called This I Love. And I can't, I just can't. I know how the song goes in my head, but if I hear it, it's going to be sloppy. It's going to be ugly cry for a little while. And after that, you know, I'll probably be good, but like, I'm good. You know, this is, you know, like 15 years almost since this friend of mine passed. I'm still kind of processing the whole thing. I'm still kind of working on that.
Oh, but, yeah, that's how it works.
I mean, that's how it works, man. Yeah. Like, you know, and I'm still very close friends with her husband. He and I play together. He's a musician as well. But like, I just, like you said, like I'm not ready to revisit that right now. I'm not ready. You know, I don't need to. That song is here and it's here. And it's that song for some reason. The song is about a romantic relationship gone sour, and it's about saying goodbye to that romantic relationship. But when you get down into the lyrics, there's not an awful lot there that couldn't be interpreted as saying goodbye to a friend who's passed on into the next plane of existence. You know, like it could, you know, the feeling of loss that's being experienced by both the person telling the story of the song and the listener of the song, myself, those, you know, those two were the same. So it, you know, that was a song that I needed at that particular moment. And it's the song that, like, you know, now I don't need that anymore. Like, I got the soundtrack for that moment, and I don't, I'm good. I'm good on that. You know, like, I think that was the song I needed to part my ways with that person, you know?
Yeah. When my mom passed suddenly, like actually 6 years ago, I think almost to the day, I think it's today. And the song that I can't play ever is Butterfly by Donald Byrd. It's a dope song.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm like, I remember, I'm like, I just had to put that one up. I'm like, nope. So I know how you feel.
No,
I can't listen to that song. Like, the last time I heard it, my mom passed suddenly, and I couldn't process everything like I was supposed to. And I remember something dumb happened where, and okay, so the point of our podcast is to share, right? And be honest. So years ago, mom bought me a Steelers hat, and I wore that hat until it fell apart. You remember like the one with like the fuzzy top or whatever, like the fuzzy ball top or yes. whatever. And I'll rock that hat until it fell apart, she had to throw it away. Like, you can't wear that hat anymore. It's a wrap on that hat. I never bought another one, never wore another one because that one meant so much to me. And my buddy Steve, shout out to Steve, was trying to quit smoking. So I turned him on to needlepoint, to knitting, right? He finally stopped smoking. Like, when he wanted to smoke, he would make something. You know what I mean? So he like learned how to knit. And I shit you not, he made me a wool and like cashmere Steeler cap, like with the little fuzzy ball on top and the whole thing. And like the insignia from you know, handmade.
Wow, no shit.
Yeah. And I was like, man, I haven't had one of these since. And I was at a bar, like, because he worked at the bar. And I just went to, you know, support his night. So I got this hat on and I'm like, I have to go home right now, right? So I got home, I'm sitting on my patio and I'm playing music, and I was playing Butterfly. And I wept for like 4 hours uncontrollably. Mm. Like, I saw the sunrise crying. You know what I'm saying?
I know what
and,
you're saying.
And it was like a cool thing, like a hat, you know what I mean? That brought back all these like weird emotions. Like, oh shit, my mom, right? Because it took me a minute, because like my buddy told me, like, you're going to have a breakdown. Just, you know, just let it ride. And so that was my little breakdown. And after that, I'm like, I've never worn that hat. I've never worn that hat. And I haven't played that song since. I'm good.
Yeah. You know, and that, I think that statement right at the end says it all. I'm good. Mm-hmm. I, you know, I got what I needed to from that relationship. I got what I needed to from that piece of music being related to the relationship and reminding me, if I need to go back, I don't want to go back to the moment after my friend was buried. I want to go back to all the other moments before that.
Yeah, the good.
Those
good
are the stuff. Ones that I want to relive. So that's part of the reason why I don't want to, I'm not going to go back to that particular song, even though it's a great song. I went to see Guns N' Roses play live a couple years ago. And I was like, and they played that, which was, I wasn't expecting them to. And I was okay during that because it wasn't like, it was the studio version, I guess, that like, yeah. that I had, you know, it was that exact arrangement that I had such a reaction to. And like, you know, I'd be okay with it, but I purposely don't want to go back to that moment. I want to go back to listening to the Vang Boys, you know, and going to raves in like 2001 and shit. That's the moments. That's what I want to relive in my head. Those were the fun moments of hanging out with this person, or hanging out with, you know, somebody that I was in a romantic relationship with. So I'm going to go back. I'm going to rewind for a second and answer, Holly, your original question of the first songs that made you understand love. My answer is super corny, and it is probably mine and my eighth grade girlfriend's our song of Bryan Adams, "Everything I do it for you," end quotes, from the Robin Hood Prince of Thieves soundtrack.
It's a great song.
It's a great song. I'm not going to lie. And Bryan Adams and Mutt Lang were really a hell of a team through the 80s, 90s, and in early 2000s. But that one was the first time that song was the song that I attached to a relationship that I was in, because I had my first girlfriend when I was in eighth grade. I'm certain that I never dated or kissed a girl before then. I'm absolutely certain of that. But that's the song that, like, if I hear it, I'm like, yeah, that was it. I remember that.
That's similar to me too, Izzy. I think mine was, it wasn't anyone I dated, but I have this specific memory from like a fifth grade dance. And there was I mean, and I was not the glorious swan that I am today. So me in fifth grade was a lot. I remember wearing this horribly ugly, like peach colored two-piece button up prairie looking dress with fucking flowers. I don't know what I was thinking. Puffy sleeves, you know, that whole era.
I would give $1,000 to see a picture of that, dude. Oh,
it was awful.
We have to share pictures. We gotta share some pictures.
That's great.
But there was this boy named Mario Matucci, and for whatever reason, he had a huge crush on me, and he just tried so hard. And I remember he was the first guy I ever danced at a school dance with. And that particular song was Love Bites by Def Leppard, which really should have been a premonition for all that was to come in my relationships moving forward. But every time I hear it, I think about him and I just remember that god awful outfit and doing like the dance where you were like, you know, arm's length away because it was Catholic school and the teachers were there. You know,
there's some room for the Holy Spirit in there, yeah. Children.
Right?
Oh shit! Oh,
you know, like this part of what I really was excited to talk about is the way that not just music necessarily, though music is certainly the predominant force, I think. In my life, just because it's been a part of my profession and it's been such a dominating part of my personality and of, you know, it's been the thing that's been my passion since I don't want to say since as long as I can remember, but since the beginning of high school, since I started playing an instrument, since I started to play the guitar seriously, it became a big part of my personality for better or for worse. And so not only was it a kind of a device to, or a, maybe even like a springboard sort of thing, you know, like I would meet people and I would start talking about music, you know, and I still to this day, even this afternoon, I had a first guitar lesson that I was teaching to a woman who's right around my age. And I was talking to her about what type of music that she's into. And she's talking about, you know, she was really into Tool and she's really into System of a Down. And I was like, that helps me as a teacher to establish like what type of stuff to teach you. But it also tells me as a person, like, you're obviously a really fun person to hang out with. If you listen to System of a Down, you're going to be an interesting person for me to sit and talk to. You want to talk about government conspiracies? Let's sit and talk about, like, I know what your conversation is going to be and I'm going to tailor what I talk about to that. So, but I love the way that music attaches itself and helps us to kind of like catalog some of the moments. You know what I mean? I remember dancing at my eighth grade semi-formal with Annette Lieb to Everything I Do It For You, or Whitney Houston. What's the Whitney Houston tune? I Will Always Love You. You know, like, I remember those songs being, you know, what we dedicated to each other on B94. That was my eighth grade year.
Oh, you were doing radio shout-outs.
Oh, we were doing radio shout-outs like a motherfucker, damn. Man. Yeah, that was how you showed how you loved someone and how you showed all the rest of the kids in the class that you were going steady. Not that anybody cared what I was doing with my life, but I digress. But it's been really awesome to be able to use music and or other artistic mediums, but mostly music in my case, as a way to kind of help catalog those moments. You know, I've got my high school girlfriend. She and I have the Love Jones soundtrack, like the girl I dated through 11th and 12th grade. We listen to the Love Jones soundtrack fucking constantly. And there's been there's a lot of kids out there now who about 22, 23 years old, who let's not mince words. Like, those kids were created because of that soundtrack. Maxwell gave birth to those babies.
Oh, full disclosure. I played that. It's funny that you mentioned that, because like, Holly, didn't I text you last week? And I was like, I don't know why the hell I'm sitting in my apartment watching Love Jones and drinking bourbon by myself. And I giggled because I'm like, you know, I used to work at the lounge. Like, I don't need to watch this shit. I did that shit. It was funny. It was like bringing my work home with me or whatever. I'm like, I did this shit professionally. I did all this shit.
All like the this whole shit. Like that whole movie.
All that shit.
That whole like, movie is the lounge.
Yeah.
It all
those
is.
Are my friends. I don't have to watch this
nope.
goofy shit. But the soundtrack, though, I was playing, and I shit you not, I was playing I Can't Get Enough of You by Kenny Lattimore. Ugh. That's a dope song.
Yeah.
I played that, and I was playing Is It Never Enough by Groove Theory.
Yeah.
I was playing those two songs last week. Like, holy shit. That's a dope. I don't play the Lauryn Hill song so much, but because it's just too good. And, you know, everyone's rocked it. I'm like, I'm going to take it somewhere else. But to your point, my first, like, Holly knows this shit. I'm still cool with my first girlfriend, right? Like, I talked to her, last week? So our song was, because I'm a little bit older. Our song was Two Occasions by The Deal.
I'm not familiar.
I Only Think of You on Two Occasions. That's Day and Night.
Okay.
It's because like Babyface, it's a Babyface song, right?
Okay. Like Babyface, okay. I get the era now. Yeah.
Yeah. Babyface makes a motherfucker exhausted. Like he got lyrics like, I'll pay your rent. I'll buy your clothes. I'll cook your dinner too. As soon as I get home from work, I'm like, bitch, you're killing this man. You are killing this man. You're killing him. Like, he has no time, for real. But he writes these songs like, I'll give you the moon. What is the song? I'll give you the sun, the stars, the moon, and the mountains. I'll give you the earth. I'll give you the world and all that you hope for or some shit. I'm like, bitch, what's enough? What is enough for this woman? What's enough for her? Leave her alone. She's selfish. She's selfish as shit, right? But that's my 80s. I think that's my 80s song with I'm not going to say her name. Hola, mama. That's all I'm going to say. She knows who she is. No names. But that's the song that I think of, like, you know, back in the Bad Jerry Curl. Skating rink, slow jam days like that. I think that was like 88, 89 around there.
I was at those skating rinks, but I was not talking to girls at that point. I think I was trying to. 88, I was like 10, 11 years old. I was definitely trying to, but like there really wasn't that many girls at that particular skating rink. And if they were there, they weren't there to talk to me. I was just there to skate and like listen to Pebbles and New Kids on the Block tunes. So,
oh, you went Pebbles.
Pebbles, dude.
You went Pebbles. We are going.
You mentioned Babyface. I took it to L.A. Reid. L.A. Reid is married to Pebbles.
L.A. Reid, Pebbles. Done. Yeah, that's a full circle. Girl, that is the full circle.
Such a great tune, dude. Such a great tune.
I miss that era though of like, you just don't have ballads like you used to, like Open Arms by Journey and just these songs that I think captured emotion in small little containers of feelings, but they spoke to so many people. So that's like, you could give that shout out and like, you really felt it, you know, like you felt that song genuinely represented. And there just seems to be a lack of that now in terms of music is a communication tool for love, I guess, for lack of a better word. You know, I find it, my kids just don't have that kind of access. They listen to the music I listened to growing up, right? Because they don't have that.
I don't know. I think it's part of, and this was my thing, I said this years ago, this is just an opinion. And again, here's our disclaimer, don't try any of this stuff at home. We are not professionals. But I think that over the last, because think about it, people don't talk like how they used to talk. You know what I mean? Like we grew up, when you had a boyfriend, you would talk on the phone for hours, like on a phony phone.
You would write letters, right? Like really write them letters. In pen.
You know what I'm saying?
On like paper. I, yeah.
I've made some hearts over some eyes before, you know what I'm saying? like real talk, I would write my love letters when I was a kid, like how Prince would write his lyrics. Cause like, oh, that's just dope. I would write love letters. And the funny thing is, there's a person out there who has these love letters because they told me that they still have them. And I was like, oh shit. I would write them like, I would, you know what I mean? But it was like an I and shit. Like it was some goofy ass shit.
No. Yeah. The hieroglyphic shit.
Yeah. Like as opposed to the word two, I would use it like a real two.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I was goofy as hell. And awkward. I'm still awkward, but like I'm cute enough to get away with some of the shit I get away with sometimes and shit.
I guess now it's emojis, right? I mean, I think that's kind of taken over, or it's shorthand, but I think it loses some of the romanticism, you know.
It does, because people don't talk like how they used to talk. You know what I mean? And I remember years ago, like I said, like there's no inflection in a text, right? There's no emphasis like of you know, vocalization in the text. It's just words.
Yeah.
Right. So people don't, and now that we're like, what, we're fucking 15, 20 years into this shit. So there's like adults now that grew up without talking to each other. And they're not used to talking to each other. Have you talked to a person who's like 20, 25, just like have a conversation with them? They get scared as hell when you use real words.
I don't know. My kids are a little different because I raised them differently. But yeah. I can. They're friends. Yeah, I can see. They kind of look at you like, what is this language?
Why are you being so weird and open and discussing things? That's not what we do.
That's not what we do. We use our, you better use your thumbs. We grew up with, there's people with thumb feelings out there for real. And I think what's happened is it's removed some of the passion, right?
Yeah.
Like there's feelings.
It removes. It really. Great. It's true though.
It's true. It's true. That's why I'm laughing.
Got thumb feelings. It's funny as hell. Like I had to tell somebody not too long ago, because I don't like to text for long periods of time. Like I don't like to have like long ass text conversations. I think it's dumb. Just get, you know, you can use the phone. I told this woman, I was like, you know, you can actually use that device that you keep thumbing me with to hit and call me. You can actually use this to talk to me on. And she was like, I'm just not used to doing that. And I'm like, oh, you're corny as hell. You can't have like a real, real conversation. So I literally called her on the phone and was like, hey. And she was like, hey. I was like, let's have a conversation. Oh, okay. Right. And it took her a minute to like warm up to actually talking on the phone. I'm like, what do you do with your phone? Like, it's not just for Angry Birds.
It's a miniature computer, basically.
I'm like, but it just bothers me that we lost something in the mix over the phone technology.
Well, we did. And I think part of that is really just like the concept of effort. You know, and the amount of effort. So I have all the love letters anybody has ever given me. Like I keep those. I think that, I don't know, my kids will throw them away, burn them. They can do whatever they want. But until I die, like I know that they're there and somebody cared enough to like sit and write something out by hand and take the time. One of my favorite possessions I have is that, you know, I had a girlfriend in college. She was just this amazing human, but she made me mixtapes. And I still have those and I still play them once in a while. They're songs by Portishead that I can only listen to like once a year, you know.
Right.
But the amount of effort that it used to take you to make a mixtape for someone. I mean, like, unless you had that tape and had a double, you know, radio cassette recorder.
The double joint. Yeah.
You were listening to the radio to try to catch that song and hit record when it came on. I mean, it was like, it could be like a 3-day project to get like two songs down, you know? And so I think that amount of effort is just so different than the culture we live in today, where things are accessible very quickly and just when you want them. And, you know, I don't know if it's better or worse. because I think it has different kinds of pros and cons, but I think it's just, it's a different way of approaching relationships. I also think though that younger generations are much better at looking at something and being like, this does not work for me. So I'm not putting in any more effort, you know, whereas like I'm generation right. X, like I like have to beat something to death until I'm done with it, which is just a character flaw as far as I'm concerned.
Well, it is what it is, but you are you, and you shouldn't be any other way but the way that you, that makes you feel like the best version of you. And I feel that way about the young people too. I'm not going to be too quick to dismiss young people for the concept of ghosting, because they're just not putting up with something for any longer than they have to. And that's a behavior that I find somewhat commendable. I don't condone it in a professional setting. And I'm not saying like you always have to, you know, always give 2 weeks notice to every boss. No, some bosses deserve 5 seconds before you're the fuck out the door. Some bosses deserve that. But other settings don't warrant that. Like some, you know, in recent years, I've seen the behavior of some musicians that I work with, or some musicians that I play with a few different wedding bands. One is my primary band, and one I fill in with every now and again. And this, I recommended the secondary band that I fill in with sometimes. I used to play with full time, and I recommended another friend of mine for the gig whenever I was given the boot for that gig. And it was all cool. It was because I was joining another band and I was doing some work with them, and everything was cool and everything was classy. There was really no big deal, but I was shown the door. And so the other dude came in and played the gig for a few years, and recently ghosted the gig entirely. And, you know, it was like during COVID. So it's not like we're talking about a ton of gigs, but like just hasn't returned any communications regarding like, hey, do you want to be in the band anymore? If you don't, that's fine. But like, you know, that's okay. But, you know, let us know what you want to do. You know, I guess that has happened with not only the guy who I recommended, but the guy after that. Like, you know, for some reason, nobody wants to say to these people, I don't want to play with your band anymore, which is, again, it's fine. But it's just one of those things, like in some settings, like if I was working for Walmart, I wouldn't give a fuck about that sort of thing. I'd be like, you go do your thing, live your best life. In this kind of setting, it's like, why couldn't you just send it a nice text? You know what I mean? So it's one of those situational things. And I'm certainly not going to knock young people for deciding that something doesn't work for them. There is, I think, an element of diplomacy that I think could be exercised by some people in exiting a situation. You know, you can say,
oh, indeed, yeah.
Yeah, you can say, this doesn't work for me. And that's not something that I knew, I didn't know how to do that until I was into my 20s, 25, 26. And I was a working, you know, musician. And, you know, I don't want to say I found out the hard way, but I certainly learned how to do it. And it certainly is, it's a learning process, or it's a process. Like I'm still kind of learning this, but it doesn't take a significant amount of effort to be a decent business person and say, I don't want to do this for this reason. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that takes a lot of effort. I'm not going to beat a person up for not doing that. If, you know, maybe this particular person has like super crazy anxiety issues and they just can't bring themselves to send a text that might, you know, hurt someone's feelings. I get that. And in some of my early romantic relationships, that was the case. The girl I dated in 10th grade, I couldn't break up with her. I had to send friends to do that for me. And I still feel fucking horrible about that.
Hi. But you know what though? That sets a dope ass precedent that you can have, like, you know, like, that's like having your lawyers go out and say, like, hi. Like, you start, like, she got served. You know what I'm saying?
It did, like, but it's, you know, it's not, I'm really happy that I have friends that I've had friends. I had friends back then, and I have friends now who would go to the mat for me in that way. And I have plenty of friends who I would do the same thing for. Like, you know, there are some friends who I would absolutely help bury a body if they needed me to. And they, nobody would ever, you know, like, I've got those kind of connections with my friends. I'm really happy that I have, that I had those connections with friends like that back then. I'm not as proud of the behavior. Like, I, you know, I walked past that girl and she was crying her fucking eyes out later that day. And I was like, damn, dude, like, I am an asshole for that, you know? And I was in 10th grade. I don't, and I realized, at, like, I called that girl and left, I had to leave her a voicemail on her answering machine, but I apologized to her afterwards. I was like, look, that was fucked up. I'm sorry. You know, I never heard from her again. I never saw her again. She's nowhere on Facebook. I hope she's doing well. I know she got pregnant not long after that with the guy that she dated right after me. So, you know, like, I hope she's doing well. I really do. Like, Lisa, really, I'm so sorry. Shout outs.
You ruined her life.
But, like,
you changed the course of a woman's life.
I changed the course of that woman's life dramatically.
Yeah.
And now I realize now that kid is 25 years old. Like, I could be working with that kid. Maybe that kid is almost 30. I don't even want to think about what year. That was 93? Shit, that kid is like 27 years old. Fuck. I didn't even think about that.
I ghosted someone in high school. Did you ever have like stuff where your friends would set you up with a friend that they had, but you didn't know that friend, right? Because they went to a different school and you would just talk to them on the phone. And then it was like a thing where you would finally meet in person. Like, things were cool on the phone, but it's like, was it going to work when you actually met? And it was just as I might, and I didn't know I grew up having anxiety. Like, I didn't figure that out till I was an adult. And my anxiety was like, I fucking can't do this. And so I left this kid like standing in a McDonald's somewhere on the, you know, south side of town, just chilling, waiting for me to show up. And we don't have cell phones then. So it's not like, you know, he could call me and be like, where are you at? It was just, whew.
I can't beat you up for that either. Like, I can't beat you up for it.
I think about some of the songs I listened to as a kid, and they're wild as fuck. There's some wild ass songs out there. And like, we were talking about this when we had Gaz on the show. The song, remember Orange Juice Jones? I saw you and him walking in the rain. That joint. You ever listen to that song the whole way through?
Vaguely. I don't remember the specifics of that song, but I know what you're talking about.
Listen to this song later on today. Just listen to it one time. Basically, this dude who has money is dating this younger woman or whatever, and he treated her very well. And so, like, the song is basically, like, he saw his girlfriend walking in the rain with some dude. So at the end of the song, she comes home and he's like, hey, let me get your coat. Let me take off this mink coat I bought you, right? And so in the song, like, it's in the song, it's like he's not even singing. He's just talking at this point. He was like, I missed you today. I missed you so much, I followed you, right? So they're stalking. So he stalked her, right? This is a slow song. This is a song from the 80s. And he's like, so close your mouth because you cold busted, right? This is how the song goes. He was like, my first impulse was to do a Rambo, right? This is what he says in the song. Wow. He's like, my first impulse was to run up on you, do a Rambo, pull out the jammy and flat blast both of you. He says that in the song. He was like, I had double murder in my heart when I saw you this afternoon, right? Like, I was going to kill you in the street. I was going to shoot you down in the street in the middle of the song, right? And like, he goes on to, like, you know, berate her a little bit, belittle her, and then he kicks her out the house, right? Which is funny. I mean, it's not funny, but like, goddamn, some of the stuff we listened to was like mad rugged. Like, to this day, I can't listen to Sade. Without a guardian, without, you know what I'm saying? It's like, I can't listen to that shit by myself. And the person knows why I can't.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I can't listen to any of that shit. Like, I was with my sister not too long ago, and she was playing Sade, and we're in her, it was me and my brother-in-law, in her truck. And I'm like, how can I really contemplated jumping out of a moving vehicle. Right. Because she was playing like, it was like the, we were like three songs into Sade's greatest hits. And I'm like, right. Like, so there's certain things, certain music I can't listen to at all. I can't listen to the Coltrane for Lovers album.
Oh, I know, like, that record.
Yeah. The one with like Billy, I think Billy Eckstein does all the vocals. And Duke Ellington composed it or whatever. Uh-huh. In the Sentimental Mood is on that album.
Yo,
right.
Speaking of the Love Jones soundtrack,
that's right? A dope
that
song.
Particular that's... tune plays a significant role in my 11th and 12th grade relationship with this girl, Marsha. That was you know, the song that takes both of us back to that particular moment. Now that song, that arrangement of that song, is something that I don't care to revisit. I love the song and I love it, and it's Duke and it's Train together, and it's fucking badass. But I don't need to hear that anymore because it's memorized up here. I, you know, it's indelibly connected to that particular time in my life. That being said, as a jazz musician, I love calling that tune.
It's literally the last song I want to hear before I die.
That's a goddamn good one.
That's on my list. That's on my two songs that I want to hear before I bounce. If I'm given, you know, the opportunity to hear it. But like, yeah, certain music brings you joy. Certain music, it's weird because I grew up listening to a lot of different kind of music. Like the other day I was playing What a Fool Believes by
Michael McDonald.
But no, it's the Kenny Loggins version.
Oh, okay.
Right. It's Kenny Loggins and Michael McDonald live. Right. It's so fucking dope. And it brought me back to like, because my dad would play the Doobie Brothers. And for years, when I was a kid, I thought that Michael McDonald was black. Like, you couldn't tell me that Michael McDonald wasn't black. You couldn't tell me that Hall & Oates wasn't black. Right. And I remember.
You can still convince a number of people that Michael McDonald may, in fact, be black.
He may zip that outfit. He needs to zip that shit out and step out when he gets home at night and shit. No, but it's funny as hell because like back in the day when I thought the Doobie Brothers were black, right? I just thought that they were black. And there's an episode of, I'm gonna age myself because I'm a little bit older than both of you. Oh, remember What's Happening?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's an episode where Rerun has to go to a concert with a big ass cassette, like the old school cassette. And like go to a Doobie Brothers concert with this big ass cassette recorder to record like a live bootleg recording of the Doobie Brothers. And while like Rerun is like breakdancing or whatever, like he's like pop locking, and this big ass tape recorder falls out, and the Doobie Brothers like stop the show because this fat kid is bootlegging their show. And I'm like, but the funny part was, I'm like, who are these white dudes that are singing Doobie Brothers songs? Like, that's the part. Fuck all this. Like, who's these white dudes? And my dad was like, this is some bullshit. Yeah, this is some bullshit. Right. It was like a political moment for me. And, you know, and my mom was like, no, the Doobie Brothers are white. I was like, the devil, you say. Right. Couldn't tell me.
Wasn't there a George Clinton tune, maybe Chocolate City, where he's talking about the Doobie Brothers? And he was like, now, can you imagine some Doobie in your funk?
Oh,
I always loved that lyric, man. That's hysterical to me, man.
I met George Clinton by accident standing outside of the I was downtown Ventura and he was doing a show. He was on a Parliament show. And he was outside smoking a joint. And I was going to the show and he was standing outside. He was cool as shit. He was real, real cool. But he was mad about something. He was mad because the money at the gate wasn't right. He didn't pack the house or whatever. I'm like, dude, you're in Ventura. Like, you should have done a show in LA or whatever. And he was like, how you doing, young blood? I'm like, I'm good. How you doing, my man? And I knew who he was, whatever. And he was like, these motherfuckers is fucking with my money, right? I was like, oh shit. I was like, for real? He's like, yeah, they fucking with my gate or whatever. And I was like, oh shit. He was like, you want to hit this? I'm like, no. No. But I was like, I'm good. I'm like, thanks, bro. I was like, break a leg, have a great show tonight or whatever. I was real, polite or whatever to him. But I'm not gonna smoke whatever George Clinton's smoking.
There was most likely cocaine in some sort in that joint. Like just knowing the man, having read his biography, like there was most likely cocaine of some sort in that joint. Oh. And or PCP.
Oh, PCP, I was about to be butt naked. Yeah, I was about to be butt naked. You made a
good choice there, Ernest. My man.
I was about to be ass naked running down the beach.
Yep. That's not a place that you need to be in at that point in your life.
No, and I've been naked on that beach, but no.
I met George Clinton in an airport. He was waiting at the same gate that I was, though. He was waiting on a private plane to go to a show somewhere, and he had I went to check in at the gate, and I kind of looked over to my left, and I was like, wow. That looks like a great George Clinton impersonator. Like, damn, like they really got the hair and everything. That's fucking cool, man. Like somebody's really into Parliament. So I continue walking forward and I get up to the counter and I check in and stuff like that. And I kind of turn around and I look and I'm like, oh, fuck, that's him. Like that's him. That's the granddaddy of it all. So I kind of like mosey and meander around and I'm kind of sitting like I wind up like on the other side of him, like 2-3 seats. And there's his personal assistant is there. And he's just kind of sitting like dozing. He's wearing a warm-up suit and some like beat up sneakers and shit. And he's just kind of sitting there. He's got his headphones on. He might've actually had an iPod, like in early, in the early days of an iPod, right? This is probably like 2004, 2005, when iPods were still a thing. But he's sitting there and he's resting very obviously. And I'm sitting there and I'm a couple of seats away from the young lady who's his assistant. And I said, I kind of leaned over and I said, excuse me, miss. She says, yeah. And I said, is that him? And she says, yeah, honey, that's him. And she says, do you want to say hi? And I'm like, no, he needs to be in the funk. Let the man do his thing with his
mom. Yeah.
Like just knowing that he was right there was enough for me. I'm good. But like, yeah, honey, that's him.
Oh, that's and then these, great.
This older couple across from us, as he leaves, he goes to get on his plane. And I like he was, he kind of nodded at me and I was like, yeah, all right, George, I know you. But as he's leaving, after he leaves, this couple across from us, and this is when he has like the feathers and the red extensions and the fucking, every color was coming out of his head. This older couple across from us in their 60s or something says, young man, was he a musician of some sort? And I said, yes, ma'am. That was George Clinton. He's a funk musician, kind of like James Brown, but kind of the next step beyond James Brown. And, oh, that's fascinating. We'll have to look for his CDs. Like, yes. Yes, ma'am. You should look for his CDs.
Absolutely,
you should look. Just get the greatest hits collection. You'll be good to go. Stay away from Maggot Brain. You don't want to deal with that. You're not ready.
Shout out to P-Funk. Do you know Larry Jones? You remember Larry Jones?
No.
He's from, you remember Stediford's Records?
Yes, on the north side, yeah.
Yeah, he's I think he used to run the joint. He's actually friends with George Clinton. He's a funketeer.
Well, George had a connection to Pittsburgh. There was his one of his early bass players, Billy Bass Nelson, is from from the Hill District.
Yeah, he's from the Hill District.
As I understand it, I think he still lives in town. I'm not sure if he's still alive. I don't really. Several friends of mine were friends with him a few years ago and knew of the connection there. And like those friends would like go to see P-Funk play, And, I don't know if Billy would sit in or I don't know if they would get backstage and all do, PCP and shit. But whatever the case, I know there's a somewhat of a Pittsburgh connection from, when George was doing his doo-wop thing back in the 50s and the 60s even.
Yeah, that's when they were the we went all the way off track because like George Clinton just makes you makes you go there like
he'll do
did
that.
You say that's George Clinton. It went from George Clinton to PCP.
Well, it all comes back to being naked on a beach somewhere. Yeah,
it all comes back to being naked on a beach. But it's like, I don't know. The older I get, I get wrapped up in my feelings easy. So certain music, I just can't play anymore. I'll play it or I won't, you know what I mean? Or like that shit goes away from me. Like right now I'm banging, what's her name? Susan Carroll. She's dope. And I'm playing cartoons. Like C-A-R-R tunes or whatever. I'm playing that and I'm playing more happy music. I'm not playing a lot of, you know, introspective because I drink bourbon alone by myself too much. So I don't want to get too deep into my feelings.
No, you don't want to get too deep. No. That's a hole you don't want to go down.
It's true, though. Like you have certain things that you just can't untie from certain musical events. Like, you know, my younger son is 14 now, but we had a baby shower for him at the lounge. And his name is Coltrane. Obviously, I'm a fan of jazz. And we had, you know, our gift to everybody was that we created a CD soundtrack that they could take away. It was like Coltrane sows the seeds of love. You know, I'm pretty sure it had like a plant sprouting. I made the CD cover and shit myself. But I mean, there's all this great music by Earth, Wind, and Fire and all this like hard, you know, hot and heavy R&B. And it's just like, I can't even go there. It's like, you know, divorce number two, can't do it. So,
yeah. Oh yeah. Was that two?
That was number two. Yeah.
Okay. Cause like, yeah, again, folks, we're not professionals. we just do this to share. Like I can't listen to Rocket Love. I'm not really slow jamming it right now. I can't do it. And if, like I said, you might have to do a welfare check on me. Like you come to my apartment and like the Sweetest Taboo has been playing on repeat and you smell something funny. That's me.
Do you have like a breakup song though? Like I have music that if I'm approaching a breakup or if like I have a feeling that's like imminent that I gravitate towards because it grounds me. Like I have a couple songs like that. Al Green is my artist for that for sure. Like I will listen to anything Al Green. And then there's some songs from the soundtrack of Notting Hill that are pretty decent. And what's it called? High Fidelity is one of my favorite soundtracks of all time. That's like my ultimate like breakup with NADB.
Best soundtracks.
It really is. But like there's songs on there. Yeah, it just like they will.
It's a great movie.
They allow me to grieve, I guess, is what I'm kind of getting at. Is there any music that you go to that makes you feel like it helps you grieve?
Mine is, and I sent you the song, Holly. Mine is Conception by Black Thought, who I think is personally the dopest MC ever. And I mean, people will argue that, but like his body of work is amazing. It just is, like, dude. So Conception is a song that I've been listening to a lot. When I get like really in my emotions or whatever, I play my mom's favorite album, which is Amazing Grace by Aretha Franklin. The live version that she did in the church in LA like 50 years ago or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah,
like,
that's killing, man. I've heard that.
I love Aretha. I'm like you. I haven't played Al Green in a clip. And one of my favorite Al Green songs is Guilty. That's like a slept on hit right there. And there's this artist. His name is there's a singer called Michael Kilgore. He's been around for a minute, but he has a cover. And I hate this fucking song, but I like the way that he did it. The Greatest Love of All, right? Mm. With what's the name of the band? Scott Bradley.
Oh, Scott Bradley. Postmodern Jukebox.
That Yahtzee, that one. He does a really dope cover, and I actually like his cover of that song.
Huh.
But like, I have a list, like I have a feel good playlist, right, that I go to with all the songs that like make me happy and keep me steady. But I don't fuck around too much with the emotions. I've been playing like a lot of like Pete Rock and CL Smooth, old school De La. There's this new, well, he's not new. There's this this cat named Jared Lawson, who's a really dope, underappreciated singer. I've been playing some of his stuff lately, but I'm not really going down the, I'm not going down the love, I don't want to say it this way. I'm not going down the love hole right now.
That's what she said.
Somebody wants me to go down the love hole right now, but I'm like, I'm good on missing cues. I'm cute and socially awkward.
You know who I have to give a shout out to as well, like from the lounge days that I think was always good at taking music and putting you in your motions is Gene Stovall. Like still have his CD that he recorded at the lounge. What was that, like 2003? I mean, I still have stuff of his on CD that I've converted that I still listen to. And he did that acoustic version of Heart-Shaped Box, which is probably one of my favorite covers of that anyone has ever done in all time. Like, it's just an amazing, amazing version of that. And
shout out to Gene.
Shout out to Gene.
Big shout ups out to Gene.
You know what? I remember, and I think I told Holly this before. I remember I'm about to have like a lounge moment. I remember the day, the last night at the lounge, which was a Saturday, and I got there early or whatever. I'd missed the photo shoot because I was jet lagged. And I got there and I was setting the bar up, right? And I was setting it up the way that I wanted it to be, like how I always had it. Like my speed rail and everything like that. And Holly, you remember like Pet Simon?
Yeah.
They were rehearsing. Right. And I'm sitting there, I'm cutting lemons. I'm sitting there cutting lemons behind the bar. And I'm looking around and they were singing, what was the name of the song? It might have been You. Right. It's from like it's on their album or whatever. And I remember like I have to go outside and I gotta go cry, right? I remember that, like, I have to go somewhere right now and, like, let this one out. So, like, that's an album. I love that album, right? But I don't play it often. I just don't, because it's so funny, because that room had, like, really weird acoustics. So, like, you could, that room was just weird. It had weird sound. So, like, when I hear that album, I think of the lounge, I'm like, oh, that hurts. Got to turn that off, right? So there's certain music, like, you know, if you're a human being, music is going, you got to have music that moves you, right? I don't care what it is, but I'm a fan of, like, I don't play music that hurts people, right? I'm not big into gangster at all. And, you know, we talked about that before. I'm not big into gangster music. I'm into music that moves people in a constructive and loving and positive way.
Thank you for joining us for part one of this special edition of Love and Music with Izzy Funk. Please join us for the second edition in a couple weeks. And as always, if you find yourself in darkness, we hope it's in the shadow of love.